This is Finding Human with Sue Jackson, only on 101.9 High FM.
Hello, this is 101.9 High FM on the Finding Human program. My name is Sue Jackson, and I'm really very happy today to be with to have my guest in Israel, Dr. Les Glassman. Les is a dental surgeon and the Israeli Philatelic Commissioner, and much, much more. He interviews Holocaust survivors, the most beautiful interviews. We'll talk about that shortly. But today's program we would like to dedicate to a very dear friend of Les's, Larry Pfeiffer. I have never met Larry in person, but we have corresponded with each other over the years. Les kindly invited me to join his program of YouTube on his site, and Larry was putting my YouTubes onto Les's site. So each week I would correspond with him via email, and sometimes we would share news, and I miss him. And Les is going to tell us a little bit about his long friendship with Larry and what it meant to him. Les, can I hand over to you to tell me a bit about Larry?
Okay, first of all, Sue, I really want to thank you for that very kind introduction. I so appreciate it, Sue. And Larry was also very fond of you, and he was very happy to upload your podcast onto the YouTube. And Larry, I first met when I actually made Aliyah 32 years ago. He became a patient, and then he introduced me to his wife and his daughters. And I've been treating him, and we became more than just a patient. We became actually very, very close friends. And I invited him to my simchas, and I went to his simchas. And what would happen is that I would video at the great synagogue, Yehuda Avner. He was the ambassador, and he once gave a talk about what the censors wouldn't allow in his book called the Prime Minister's. And I wanted to video that talk because I thought it was such an incredible topic. And I went to the chairman of the shul and I said, can we video? And he said, definitely not. Yehuda was a patient of my brothers and mine. But the chairman of the shul said, no. So I said, why not? He said, it's too expensive. So I said, I've got a video camera. I'll do it for free. Mm-hmm. So I started videoing at the Great Synagogue, and I would put them onto DVDs. And it was very, very time consuming. But I enjoyed doing it, and I would give all these DVDs to the Great Synagogue, and people could get them there and give tzedakah to the shul. And then Larry was the one that said to me, why don't you make it more public? Why don't you put it on YouTube? And I didn't even know what YouTube was. And Larry actually organized it. So my YouTube was actually, Larry was the founder of it, but he didn't want his name to appear. He was a very, very modest person. And he was very involved with high tech and a very private person, but he was so helpful. And he was the one that started the YouTube channel, which should have been in his name, but he put it in my name. And it was a voluntary. We did it always voluntary. It was never for money or never any financial gain. Mm. But Larry, what happened with Larry is that eventually he did tell me that he was born during the war in Budapest. And he was nipped 2 weeks ago, and he was 83. And what happened is his parents gave him over to a non-Jewish Gentile family that actually saved him during the war. And then after the war, he was reunited with his parents, and his sister was subsequently born. And then they lived under communist rule till 56, where they managed to escape to America. But unfortunately, a lot of his family didn't survive the war. And that really, it had an indelible impression on Larry, that why did his family not survive? Why did other Jews, why did American Jews, why didn't the world do more to try and save the Jews of Hungary, because it was near the end of the war. You're talking about a few months before the end of the war. Mm. And it's horrendous what happened in Hungary. Mm. Anyway, Larry was amazing. He actually introduced me to such amazing people. His whole philosophy in life was that we should not only blame the non-Jews, but what about Jews that saved Jews? Why aren't they recognized at all the Holocaust museums? There were many Jews that were very instrumental in saving other Jews, including Solomon Schoenfeld. So it would be interesting to ask people, our listeners, how many people have heard of the name Solomon Schoenfeld?
Well, I haven't.
So Solomon Schoenfeld is possibly one of the greatest modern-day Jewish heroes. He saved over 3,000 Jews. He brought in over from Europe to England before the war, during the war, and after the war. And I've met quite a few of the survivors that he actually brought over. Mm. And I've had the great honor to interview them. And he did it nearly single-handedly. And eventually, Itta Zimmerman, who's herself a survivor, she got an MBE, and she organized in his honor to have a home in Stamford Hill, a retirement home, a Jewish retirement home named after him. Mm. And on the wall, as you go into the retirement home, there's a saying. Somebody asked Rabbi Schoenfeld, how many Jews did you save? And he said, no, that's not the question. The question is, how many Jews did we not manage to save?
Mm-hmm.
Which is really, he was a remarkable person. But there was also Hillel Cook. Hillel Cook was very instrumental. He went to America. He was a relation of the chief Rabbi Cook. And he wanted to awaken the American Jews to do more. He was very instrumental in organizing the march on Washington, where the rabbis had a march on Washington, and unfortunately Roosevelt wouldn't even go out to meet them. But it was a public display. The Jewish community were broken, and they were so helpless. Mm-hmm. The only thing they could really do was just to march for the plight of the Jews of Europe. And then he introduced me also to the writings of David Kranzler, a tremendous historian. He wrote mm-hmm. a lot on Jewish heroes during the Shoah as well.
Gosh, when you started interviewing Holocaust survivors, how did Larry react to that? Did he listen to them? Did he comment on them? Because it must have been very difficult for him to hear the stories.
I always asked Larry, please, I'd love you to, if I could interview you. Because Larry was the one that really, because of Larry in a way, and because of me putting it onto YouTube, it gave me an opportunity to, when I would interview the survivors, not all the survivors wanted to go on YouTube, even though it was done voluntary, but a lot of people wanted to be private. All the survivors that I've interviewed, and Baruch Hashem, thank God, there's been many, they've all allowed me to give them to Holocaust museums, mm-hmm. be it in Israel or in the States or in South Africa and in England. But not everybody wants to go into YouTube, that it's public. Mm. But Larry, he was very reserved. And I used to beg him. I'd say, Larry, please, let me just interview you about, you know, being a Holocaust survivor. But he always would put it off. And unfortunately, it's a lesson in life. And 2 weeks ago, he was next day, which came as a big shock. And now we can't do it. Which is a big pity. But Larry did introduce me to many survivors, friends of his, that I actually went to see, and I did it together with Larry, and we interviewed the Brown family. We're both, the husband and wife, were both from Hungary. They were mainly Hungarian survivors, and I did go with Larry to interview quite a few of these survivors. He introduced me to Agnes Hershey, whose stepfather was Karl Lutz. Karl Lutz had the glass houses. He was a Swiss Consul General in Budapest, and he organized the glass houses, which saved countless thousands of Jews, including Larry's father, was in one of those glass houses.
Good heavens. And you know, Les, I was on your site looking up different things about you. I mean, it's amazing what you do. But the one thing that I saw was in Indonesia in 2012, you were there as the ambassador for the philatelic, is that the right way of pronouncing it?
Yeah, okay. It's a commissioner.
For stamps. So in case people don't know the word, but you were giving a talk in Indonesia in 2012. And you were talking about your work as an Israeli stamp commissioner, and you actually thanked Larry in that. You said, I want to thank Larry for helping me with the technical side of getting these images out, because you said, without Larry, I would not have been able to do it.
So I'll just tell you something just a little bit interesting about Indonesia, because Indonesia, it's the most populous Muslim country in the world. In 2012, I actually went there. There were 250 million inhabitants of Indonesia. There's about 20 million Christians, very Zionistic Christians, because they like to come to Israel, even though they come from Indonesia. But there's no diplomatic relations, obviously, between Indonesia and Israel. And they invited us. They're very involved in the philatelic world. And different countries all over the world have these international exhibitions, which showcases the gems of philately from each country, and other countries are invited to participate. And they invited Israel. And because I've got a South African passport, so I was able to go. So I went with my wife. And it was quite an amazing thing because first of all, we were invited by the Indonesian government. It wasn't a private, not private, it was the Indonesian Post under the auspices of the mayor of Jakarta. And they had their website, and they put pictures of all the different commissioners with the flag of the countries. And the Israeli flag actually appeared on the official Indonesian website. And when we went there, I didn't know what to do because, you know, people had warned me when we arrived in Singapore, we were there for Shabbat, and the Israeli ambassador was telling us that just be careful to go with the yarmulke in Indonesia. So I wore a cap. But as we got to the airport, there was a sign, death penalty to drug smugglers. So we knew that wasn't going to affect us. But when we got through and they took and we met, and what was also interesting, everybody had to come on Saturday. And I'd written to the organizers and I said, you know, I observe the Sabbath. So is it possible if I could come on the Sunday as a big favor? And they said, no problem. And they especially had the officials waiting for my wife and I, especially at the airport. And they welcomed us.
Wow.
And they had a taxi that took us to, and it's quite far from the airport to the exhibition grounds, just my wife and myself.
How amazing.
While we were while they were taking us, I just decided, I'm not wearing my cap, and I just wore my yarmulke. And people really, first of all, most had never met an Israeli or a Jew, no one with a yarmulke. I think that was like a first.
We're going to get back to that.
So friendly.
That's a marvelous story, and we're going to get back to that shortly.
This is Finding Human with Sue Jackson, only on 101.9 High FM.
Back again. This is Sue Jackson on 101.9 Chai FM on the Finding Human program. And my guest today is Dr. Les Glassman. And Les is a dental surgeon in Israel. And he's the commissioner for the Israeli Philatelic Society. And he's talking about when he and his wife went to Indonesia. So go on about that, please, Liz.
So what was so interesting, they had at the end of the exhibition, first of all, during the exhibition, the Israeli Philatelic Federation had given me first aid covers with Jerusalem and beautiful Jerusalem of gold stamps. And I saw a lot of school children. And I actually went up to the school children and I gave them these covers as a gift. And it is as if I'd given them gold. They were so happy to receive these first aid covers from Israel. They knew, because I had a yarmulke on, they knew that I was from Israel. And they accepted me just, and my wife, so incredibly well. The hospitality was unbelievable. They were very appreciative that we actually made the trip and we went, because there were a few European countries that actually didn't go to Indonesia. Maybe they felt it was a third world country, whatever, but they were very, very grateful that we had made the trip and that we had come. And at the end of the exhibition, there was the main FIP Congress. That's a very large congress of all the different countries where they discuss very important aspects about philately and where the next exhibition is going to be and the rates of postal. It's everything to do with postal administrations. And it's a whole congress and people flying just for their congress. So it's like the mini UN. So they had all the countries and they had our names with the name of each country. And the island, didn't participate in the exhibition. So it was Israel. And next to me was Iran.
Good heavens.
So I sat next to the Iranian commissioner and I was a little bit nervous, but we got to speaking to each other and we actually became quite close friends.
Did you speak in very English, Liz?
No, in English. In English, we spoke in English. And there was always, before the Ayatollah came back to Iran in the deposing of the Shah, there was always good relations between Israel and Iran. And there's quite a large Jewish community to this very day in Iran. So we had a lot in common, and unfortunately, you know, he passed away. But we, at that exhibition, we took photographs where it's Indonesia and Israel, Iran. On the one side was Indonesia, Israel, Iran. And I promised that I wouldn't share those photos with the press or with anybody, and I never ever have. But I've got pictures of me, Israel, Iran together shaking hands. And we really got an exception. Well, his daughter actually came up to us during the exhibition and she said, how are we keeping kosher in Jakarta? And it was quite amazing that his daughter, she broke the ice and we just started speaking. Unfortunately, he passed away the following year and I sent the family an email with condolences and the son replied to me. His name is Masood. And he said, he's going to be in Australia the following year in Melbourne. And I said, well, they've asked me to be the commissioner there as well. And I actually met the son and we became extremely, and we still are, very close friends. And I asked him how things are going now with Iran with the war. And thank God he managed to leave Tehran literally about 3 days before the start of the latest war. But we're very close. My wife's close with his wife. And we have a very close connection. And we wish each other, like, I wish him Ramadan Kareem, and he wishes me for the Yom Tovim. We wish each other always. And when we go to the exhibitions, we get on very well. And it's very public because we're together having coffee, and everybody can see Iran and Israel that we get on exceptionally well.
What a wonderful story, especially for this time of such hatred that's going around, that, you know, we sort of feel that we are surrounded by people hating us. And yet it's that human story that you've just told that we have to hold on to and to realize that we are all on this journey together. And if we just look a little bit deeper, perhaps we can see the beauty within each other. You know, Les, I am absolutely amazed at the other work that you do. And you said that Larry Pfeiffer actually introduced you to a lot of Holocaust survivors, but you don't just interview them. You get really involved with them, which is what I love about your YouTubes, because you get them to bring in the photographs that they might have still had from before the Shoah. You get them to bring in artifacts to share those personal things, which I find very moving, because you're not just listening to someone's story, you're actually seeing their past life and, you know, what happened before and what's been happening since then. And you give a lot of your time to this, which is quite amazing. And, you know, Elie Wiesel said something very interesting. He said, how does one mourn for 6 million people who died? How many candles does one light? How many prayers does one recite? Do we know to remember the victims, their solitude, their helplessness? They left us without a trace, and we are their trace. And
that's so profound.
Isn't it profound?
Amazing.
Because that's what you are bringing out. You are their trace. You're bringing those stories to life for future generations, which is just amazing.
I have to just interrupt you. No, it's not me. I just have this chut, the honor to do it, but it's the survivors that I see. They are the real heroes. They are the ones that have to relive their experiences and tell it to basically kind of talk like a stranger. But what happens is that by asking them about their families, I think it becomes a very personal thing, because it's so important to know who the families were, what the background was, and how they, the account of survival, how they managed to overcome tremendous harrowing adversities, and how they prospered later on in life, and what they did with their lives. I think it's just, they are the most amazing heroes, and it's just such an honor and privilege to actually be in their presence and to be able to record it. And I'm just so grateful to each survivor, because every single survivor I've ever met is so unique and so precious. And I just feel I have a very big honor in being.
Well, I must admit, you have shared some of those honors with me and the people that you have sent my way that I have interviewed. Pessy and Sarah and Leanne, not Leanne wasn't a Holocaust survivor, but her own story. Les has sent people for me to interview who have just been so fascinating. But, you know, in order to have the trust of people, you have to show them that you are a compassionate person, that you have the time to listen to them. And that's what you do. I often watch you as you're doing your interviews. Every now and again, you can see what when you are bending over a photograph, whatever it might be. And you are absolutely involved in their story. And that is a gift, to tell you the truth, Les.
You're very kind. You're very kind. No, it's just so fascinating. It's just so... You know, what's also unbelievable is how those pictures survive. I met somebody last week that doesn't have a picture of his mother. They only have a picture of the father because the pictures of the, you know, they were lucky to even have the picture of the father. How those pictures actually survived is a story in itself.
So it's quite amazing. But the time you give is amazing. Les, I wanted to go back also to what you do also around Israel at the moment. And I think in this time of war, with the rockets and sirens and going all the time and, you know, having to keep going into the different mamads, the bomb shelters, you go around, is it with your camera that you take little videos and put them onto Instagram?
It's not. It's more onto YouTube, but or Facebook. No, it's with my.
It's a little Facebook.
It's a phone.
It's a phone.
I've got a very quite a today with the phone. You know, in the old days, you'd have to have your video camera to walk around with the video camera. But I just use the video camera for the interviews. But it's amazing when you just walk around Yerushalayim. And walking around Israel, especially in these times when we really are going through unspeakable difficulties. I mean, yesterday, I'll just give an example. While I was treating patients in Geula, it's a religious area in Jerusalem, the siren went off twice. And then we had to go to the bomb shelter in the building in the middle of treatment.
Good heavens.
The whole clinic, they closed the clinic twice. It happened in the morning, and you're in the middle with the patient, you have to just... close up, finish, and then you go down to the bomb shelter and you have to wait. And then you hear the explosions above. You actually hear these tremendous explosions. And if you aren't in a bomb shelter, you know, it's so, you know, you just can't take a chance because it's so dangerous. These cluster
bombs.
Missiles, the bombs and their missiles, and they intended to cause maximum damage. That's what the Iranians, you know. And so I just want to mention something which I don't know if our listeners really can understand, but it's so sad and it's so reminiscent of what happened in Nazi Germany. The comparison is so, you know, when the Nazis knew that they were losing.
Just hang on a moment, please. Just wait a moment. We're going to get back to that in a moment.
This is Finding Human with Sue Jackson, only on 101.9 High FM.
This is Sue Jackson on the 101.9 Chai FM program, on my Finding Human program. Sorry, my guest today is Dr. Les Glassman in Israel, and he was about to tell me a story. We are doing a pre-record at the moment, so we're not actually able to see each other, but we're doing well, I think, Les, so please go on.
Well, Sue, thank you so much. But Sue, the comparisons, what's happening today, and what happened with Nazi Germany in the Second World War, it's so stark, the comparison. You know, when the Nazis knew that they were losing at the end of the war in 1944, they put all their efforts, all their resources into trying to annihilate the Hungarian Jews. And they were so efficient in doing it. And it's so hard to even comprehend that instead of trying to save your own people and trying to get resources for your own population, they used everything they could, the transport, the trains, their manpower, in order to annihilate the Hungarian Jewry, which unfortunately they were pretty successful in doing. The same with Iran, in a way, that they put so much money, millions, billions, into arming their proxies, whether it be the Houthis, Hamas, Hezbollah. They spent billions and billions with all these missiles and all the arms that they've sent them. Yet their own people, the Iranian money, the currency is devaluated to, that's why there were so many demonstrations. People, they don't have water in Tehran. The life of the average Iranian is so terrible because there's just no money, but yet the Ayatollahs and the regime are putting all the resources into trying to destroy Israel. It's just unbelievable.
So when you go around with your camera and you take your little clips to put onto Facebook, what do you feel as you're walking around Israel today? I mean, really, it's been since October 2023, you know, since the massacre then, that you have been almost bringing a light in each time that you post something.
So it's quite interesting. When I first started with Facebook, that was also a long time ago, and also with YouTube, I really realized that not everybody really wants to see, although there have been many views, and I've never had any dislikes, and the comments have been incredible with the Holocaust survivors, but not everybody wants to just see about Holocaust survivors. Mm-hmm. So I try to put a positive, if it's on sharing things on Facebook, all positive things about Israel, because there's so much positivity going on in this country. And people need to know it. My wife, I'll give you an example. She was at a doctor a few weeks ago, and her doctor couldn't see. So there was the Arab doctor who was there, and he managed to take her in. Mm-hmm. And he did such a favor to my wife. He gave her, she needed, it's called a hitchaibut, like authorization. And he did it willingly. And when you go on the trains and you see a mixture of Arabs and Jews together, or you go to the hospitals and you see everybody interacting together, I think it's actually quite remarkable. So somebody, a patient of mine who's actually a Palestinian, she was the a South African ambassador to the Palestinian Authority, and we became also quite close friends, and his wife's Palestinian, and her mother was in Hadassah being treated and very ill, and a group of religious Jewish young kids came to play music and play the guitar for her. And they took a video of it, and I asked them if I could share it. And there've been thousands of viewers who've watched this video showing the coexistence, because there's so many good things that are happening in this country as well.
What is that video called, that so that people can watch it?
If they just go into YouTube and they'll just see, I think I put their coexistence, Palestinians and Jews in Israeli hospital. But it's just a small clip, but there's quite a few thousand views of it. And when you take just a view of the old city of Jerusalem, you know, we have such a skut, such an honor to just take a train, the light train, and about 20 minutes later, you're in the most holiest place on earth.
Absolutely.
And then you're seeing like the Kotel, or you're seeing the old city of Jerusalem. It's such an honor to be there. Not everybody can be in Israel at this time, especially now with the flight restrictions and everything. But just to see images of Jerusalem and seeing images of the country and seeing how the people are, you know, going along on their daily lives, even under such difficulties with the sirens going on and going to bomb shelters and just trying to live as normal life as possible.
And that's,
I think, it's
what
very
you,
encouraging. And it shows the resilience.
It
the
does.
Resilience of Am Yisrael.
And that's what your YouTubes do as well. They bring in a beauty into this darkness, which I just so appreciate. I really do. And you put a lot into them, Les. You know, the other thing that I wanted to ask you about, because I found it incredibly interesting, that I saw that you had gone to Dubai, and that there was a Holocaust museum founded by Ahmad Ubayt al-Mansouri there. Did you go to that Holocaust museum?
Okay, so this was, we were going to Indonesia, we went to Indonesia in 2016, there in Bandung, that's another part of Indonesia, they had another exhibition. And in 2022, again, they invited Israel, and you know, they didn't have to invite us, but we have very good connections, and on a personal level, we get on extremely well. So they invited us, and my wife and I went to the exhibition in 2022, and we went via Dubai, because there's no direct flights to Indonesia from Tel Aviv, but we went via Dubai, and we thought, you know, we'd stop off and just spend like a day or two in Dubai. And I had read that there was a Holocaust museum. where any country that I have the privilege to go to for any exhibition, I try my best to see survivors in that country. And I have managed to. I've been very fortunate. Even in Uruguay, in the middle of Uruguay, at the bottom there, I managed to actually see some survivors there. I asked people, are there any survivors? And I've been very fortunate that people actually put me in touch, and I've managed to see a few survivors in most countries. So when I went to Dubai, I knew there weren't going to be any survivors there. But somebody told me that there's a Holocaust Museum, and it's part of the Crossroads of Civilization Museum, where Ahmed Obed Mansouri, that he established. So I went with my wife. It's off the beaten track. It's not a main, for tourist attraction, but we went with a taxi, and we got, it's like in the middle of nowhere, really. But they've got this wonderful museum, and they've got artifacts from the Middle East. What he did is he's a collector of history, and he's got incredible original artifacts of Islam, of Christianity, and of Judaism. Huh. And then he thought to himself, you know, there were many, the Holocaust, you know, there were Jews that were saved by Muslims. Mm-hmm. So why doesn't he showcase that story? So he decided with his own resources, his own money, and he asked Yad Vashem, and they did help him, and he established this Holocaust Museum. Mm-hmm. So I went there, and it was, and I videoed it. And then when we were leaving, there was no one really to take us around. We just did our, we walked around and we saw it, and we were very impressed. When we were leaving, I just went to the guards and I said, you know, I've got a video of a survivor who was actually saved by a Muslim. Can I donate it to the museum? Mm-hmm. So their faces lit up. They couldn't believe what I was asking. So they got me in touch with the curator. They called her. She came, Yael Gatney. She was an Israeli living there in Dubai, and she was a curator at the time. And she couldn't believe, because they've got photographs, but they've got no actual testimonies or videos of survivors who were rescued by any Muslim righteous Gentile. Mm-hmm. So I gave them the video. I told them it's from Lina Amato Cantor. She's actually my wife's aunt. She lives in Sea Point, but she came from Rhodes Island. Mm. And Rhodes Island is part of Greece. Mm. And the Turkish consul general, well, if I can pronounce it correctly, it's always hard to me, Selahattin Ülkemen, he was the one that he saved 42 Jews from that island.
Good
and
heavens.
The rest of the Jews, and they even had a little yeshiva on that island. If ever you go to Rhodes Island, it's still in existence. Mm. There were many Jews that came from Rhodes Island to Rhodesia.
Yes.
And my wife's family were very involved with the Sephardi community in Harare, well, today Harare, but in Salisbury in those days, and also in Cape Town. There's a very big Sephardi community from Rhodes Island. Mm. And this Turkish consul general put his life at stake, and he saved 42 Jews, including Lina Amata and her parents.
Good heavens.
And I did an interview with her, and I had the interview, and I gave them the interview. And the founder of the museum, Abed Mansouri, he came down, and I gave it to him. I personally presented it to him. And I asked him, as a favor, can I just do a little interview with you about you finding the museum? And he allowed me to do it, and I just videoed him. I wasn't prepared for this. He's all very smartly dressed, and it was a boiling hot day, so I look terrible in that interview. But we did the interview in the museum, and it was something absolutely unbelievable.
And especially, you know, with you, with your yarmulke on your head, it's just wonderful to see. Now, you know, that's exactly what Elie Wiesel said, that we have to be. We have to be their trace, the people who were killed in the Shoah. He's just so right. And that's what you do. You keep telling the stories and meeting these remarkable people that you can share stories with. You're changing lives there, Les, really. We're going to get back to that in a moment.
This is Finding Human with Sue Jackson, only on 101.9 High FM.
I wanted you also to mention, I saw it was also Facebook, or was it you? No, I think it was YouTube, a young girl talking about her grandfather, who was the son of a Nazi, and her gran, who was an Auschwitz survivor, a Holocaust survivor. Do you remember that? That it was,
for sure. That was, it's Rabbi Dr. Aaron Shariashov. And he lived in the old city in Jerusalem, and I was referred to him, a very private person, but he allowed me to come. It was in the old city, I went one Friday morning, and he allowed me to do an interview with him in English.
So was his father a Nazi?
He was born in 1940 in Bochum, in Germany, and his father was a Nazi. He fought in the Nazi army, and his mother, they were Nazis. The whole family were Nazis. Mm. And what happened is that his father was taken prisoner after the war, and he was by the Russians. And he only saw him once or twice during the war. Mm. And then afterwards, when he grew up, he just developed a fascination about Judaism. And in Bochum, unfortunately, the synagogue was destroyed on Kristallnacht. But he went to the nearest town and wanted to find more about Jews. And that was his search to become Jewish. And eventually he went to study. He wanted to become a Lutheran priest. And he came to Israel in, I think it was in 63, and with his friends. And he went into East Jerusalem. In those days it was under Jordanian rule. And he actually saw the Kotel. He was so interested in anything that had Jewish, anything to do with Judaism.
So that's and, the Wailing War.
Little did he
the
know
Wailing
that years later, the Wailing War, little did he know years later that he'd be living in that old city. Huh. But he's amazing. So what happened is that he eventually did a PhD. He went to Cincinnati and he converted type of conservative reform. And then he met some Orthodox rabbis, and they said, "We'd really like you to come to Israel." And they invited him. And he went to, he was offered a job actually at the Technion. But before he was at the Technion, they said, "You should go to Mekaz HaRav. It's a yeshiva." And in the yeshiva, he was fascinated with the learning, because he had done philosophy, and he was very, very involved in education and to find out more about Judaism, and he just loved being in that yeshiva. And he actually, they said, "We have to do a proper gerut, a proper conversion," and he converted, and then eventually he became a rabbi. And he was offered, and he was a rabbi in the army, and he was offered to be the rabbi in the Technion in Haifa.
Good.
And he was very close with Shaar Yoshe, was the chief rabbi of Haifa, and he was very close with Simcha Cook. Rav Simcha Cook, who was the rabbi in the Chobot and the Old City as well. And in the, he got married, and they said, "You're going to have your wedding in the yeshiva." And I went to see him, and it was just incredible being in his presence. And he opened up, and he just gave the most amazing thing. And at the end of the interview, he said, "I nearly forgot to tell you the most important thing." I mean, every word that he said was so incredibly important and so profound. And but he said at the very end, he said, "You know, all my children are married to descendants of survivors."
Good
all
heavens.
His children have married into families of survivors. And I thought this was something. And he said, "One is still in Alon Shvot. Her name is Leah Pedler. She lives there." And I went to see her, Leah Frieda. She was in her 90s. And I was with her son, and her son spoke. And I asked, when I said, "How did you feel, you know, your children marrying into families where the grandfather was a Nazi?" And she said, "Once he converted, he was Jewish. There was no problem."
Yeah.
He said, "Not only that," he said, "we are the closest. Out of all my Maputin," he's got a very large family. He said, "Out of all my Maputin, we are the closest with Shaar Yoshe's family."
Wow.
And what happened is that I once did another interview with Nechama and Yechiel Teller. They live, he's from Haifa and she's from Petah Tikva. And I would go and I would show them, because that story about Shaar Yoshe, I told a very close, she's an amazing lady. She's a niece of Nechama Leibovitz. And she wrote in Ami magazine an article on the most unlikely Shidduchim. Ami is very similar to Mishpacha, the magazine Mishpacha. And Shira Leibovitz, she wrote this most incredible article. He didn't want to do an interview with her. He just used the video that, you know, that I took. And she wrote this magnificent article called The Most Unlikely Shidduchim. And I showed them this article because they don't really, you know, when I go to people, I have to try to tell them, explain to them why I'm doing it. But I bring a lot of the articles or pictures or things that I've done in the past so they can see what I'm doing and why I'm doing it voluntary. And I gave them this article, the most unlikely. And Professor Taylor said to me, well, that's my family. My daughter married into Sharia Shifts. I couldn't believe it. There I was interviewing another survivor, Professor Taylor, with his sister, Nakama, and one of his children had married Sharia Shifts' child.
Look
and what
at
a
that
small
connection.
World.
Wow. Isn't that amazing? Good heavens.
It was something very special.
Liz, we're going to be told to wrap up shortly. I would like you just to say something about Israel today. How are you all coping with the constant running and being woken up at night if you don't have mamads or miklats in your own homes? How do you feel that people are managing?
So I think what's incredible is, you know, it has been very difficult. And when I speak to patients as well, and I asked them how you're coping, because it's very difficult. And we saw what happened in Beit Shemesh, where people, a shul was destroyed with, and people in the bomb shelter were as well. But we, you know, we just came out of Purim. And I must mention this, Beryl Wine was such an inspirational speaker, and he had such an enormous impact on my life. He was a historian as well. And he would always quote Shlomo HaMelech, who said the most remarkable saying, said, Ein chadash tachat ha-shemesh, nothing is new under the sun. And that was Beryl Wine's philosophy. In Jewish history, what was done many years ago, it's nothing new. So what Haman did to try to destroy us, we see the Nazis tried the same, and we see the Iranians are trying. I mean, we don't have a border with Iran. Why would this the rulers of Iran, and not the people, when I meet Iranians, especially in the stamp exhibitions, they're lovely people. The Israelis and Iranians had such a wonderful connection. But the evil rulers, unfortunately, the Ayatollahs, have like such a hatred, and they prepared to, like I mentioned before, they prepared to sacrifice their country and everything in order to try and to destroy Israel. Mm. So we feel here, and everybody feels, we are so blessed that we are now, we have the support of America, and having gone through October the 7th and having looked at what's going on all over the world and the reassurance of this terrible anti-Semitism. I mean, in Canada, the two shuls, I've been in both of those shuls, in the Bayit and the shul in Bathurst, that they had automatic weapons. Unbelievable, they were shot at. And what's going on in Australia, all over the world. It's just, we feel, thank God, and this is, and I think if I could leave you with this, what's very interesting, wherever I've done an interview with survivors, and I did last Pesach, we were very fortunate to be in Budapest, and I met four survivors in Budapest, and they don't have a mezuzah on their doors, and they're very quite far removed from Judaism. But when I always ask them to give a message, and I ask all the survivors, please, to give a blessing and then a message, every survivor I'd say, nearly every single survivor says, thank God we've got an Israel. Thank God we've got our own country. I think that is the message, that we have our own country, that we have to be strong. We have to appreciate this country. It came very difficult. It wasn't given to us. I met survivors, very religious rabbis that came here as young kids from the Shoah, from the Holocaust, and they fought in 48. So many, many of their friends unfortunately died in that war. So many died in the 48 war. But we are so blessed that we have our own country, that we can live, and we don't have to rely on the world for us to survive, that we have our own country with the help of Hashem.
Absolutely. And on that note, we're going to have to end. Liz, I'm hoping that Larry is sending blessings down on your head.
Thank you
so
much.
You know, for Larry Farber.
I just want to,
and his name.
May his memory be for eternal blessing. And Sue, thank you so much for giving me the opportunity, especially in memory of Larry, a very dear friend. Not only to me, but to so many people. He helped so many people. And he did it always voluntary and always with such a great heart.
And may his memory always be for a blessing. Thank you, Les.
And thank
Carry
you,
on
Sue.
With your wonderful work, and we will be in touch.
You're very kind, Sue, and thank you very much.
Thank you, Les. God bless. Bye.